I want you to want me.
Me, a Hanson cover, first played in 2000, according to Hanson Stage, where we simultaneously got to fangirl out over not only Hanson and that song, but I'm sure what was one of all of our favorite movies, 10 Things I Hate About You. It was match made in heaven as far as I was concerned back then. Hello, welcome back to season two. My goodness, thank you for sticking with me. I did make a little Instagram update. The podcast is still going. I am sorry for such a long break. It was never my intention, but I've started to realize I'm not entirely sure what my intentions ever are anymore. I think that I always start with the best intentions. And they maybe never come to fruition. I think that's just me. So I did have, it was summer over here. Obviously in Australia, it is our summertime, or just finishing up our summertime. So that's always great because obviously you're outside and you're at the beach. And my kids are home from school, so we're doing all the things. And it's Christmas and New Year. And I also mentioned that both my daughter and I had pneumonia, really yucky bout of pneumonia, and I ended up in hospital for a little while as well. That cut into my time, so it's just one of those things. Listening back to season one, I really am proud of, I suppose, how much this podcast has grown and how much my own creativity has grown through it. And I think I'm just trying to allow myself to be really flexible with the direction that it goes in, because that's how it's going to have to be. You know, I started off wanting to do one song from the middle of nowhere for each guest that came on. I had all these different ideas. I was sort of going in all these directions. And I suppose the reality of it is, I don't know, maybe it's just being creative or having another idea pop in to my head and not fully executing anything. I don't know what it is, but all I know is that I'm having fun. And yeah, I'm really thankful that you missed the podcast and that you're looking forward to this episode. So, or just the podcast coming back in general. This episode we have Jason Taylor, and talking about having fun and sort of weirdly circling back to the very first sort of little podcast snippet that I put out about why I'm making this podcast was really just about following my joy about turning 40 and just doing things that lit me up. Jason is very much a very similar person. Jason is one of the kindest, most sincerest people that you will meet, and has so much joy in his heart and so much love for music in general. I was going to say Hanson, which is true, but really, Jason is one of those people that has music just in his heart, and you can see how happy it makes him, how much joy it brings him, and how much joy it brings him spreading that to other people. So that warmth will really come through in this episode. Jason, did I mention? No? No, I don't know. So here we go already. Jason was the guitarist in the backup band between, you know, around 97 to 2000. So he did the Albertine tours and also the This Time Around tours, which are awesome. It's so cool. He's based out of the Midwest. He's got a cool band called Casey Bones, and they play Grateful Dead music. So if you're around the Midwest, I definitely recommend looking it up and just going to check out the next gig, because I think that you'll really enjoy it, and it's just a great energy to be around. He's also got two albums out on iTunes if you wanted to check them out. Honey Spoon, Sixth Sense it's called, so you can check that out too. So yeah, I hope you enjoy the episode. It's so good to be back and up and running, and yeah, I'll talk to you soon. Hello and welcome to the Hanson Hour. We are actually on my first episode of season two, and we have Jason Taylor here with us today, who is, I'm very, very excited to be talking to you. You were the guitarist, rhythm guitar mostly for Hanson between 1998 and 2000, about those dates. Welcome to the show. Thank you for being
Megan,
here.
Megan, no, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much. I feel so honored to be just even being talked to about those years. It's awful fun. Yeah.
So you and I actually were introduced through Scott Hogan, who yes. was the bass player. Did you guys play together at the time?
And with Scott Hogan? Yes. Our tenure matched almost date for date, but he started with them, I believe, in the early summer of 97. I think he was doing a lot of the promotional radio shows and some of the other larger events. But we met, shortly, and I got that job in early February of 98.
Okay.
And Scott and I we've lifelong friends from that experience and that hangout. And he's one of the most talented bass players I've ever played with. Just a super, super nice fella.
Super nice guy.
I love Scott.
Mm-hmm. So I loved Scott's story about how he got the gig. How about yourself? How did you happen to be ending up doing this?
Well, that is an interesting story. So I've been involved in production and show business pretty much from teenage years on. Okay. I've been doing production, lighting, video, audio professionally since I was 19 years old. Okay. So I had already been running lights for bands and touring with artists and corporate events, doing lighting mainly, focusing lights, running lighting consoles and designing. Always a musician. I've been a musician. That's the first thing since I was 11 years old. But I think I find in our business, you find people with talent of musicianship as well as production. And it was just one of those natural paths for me. I had a band in high school and that was what I was 100% into. And like a lot of things, it just didn't continue on. So I was already intrigued with production and I found an avenue through local stagehand and college there in Arkansas where I grew up and managed to find a path into a career working in show business. And so it seemed like a perfect fit for me because I was already, you know, that energy worked well for me, just being around the rock show, country, just the show business of it. So I was out on tour as one of the lighting crew members with Fleetwood Mac in the fall of 97. I have a buddy here in town. We were writing songs and my brother writing songs. So I was saving up my per diem, which we get, a certain amount of per diem every day to help us eat and, be on the road away from your home and family and all. So I was saving that money to go in the recording studio and put my original songs out. I had a good conversation with our production manager at that time on Fleetwood Mac about seeking the record deal and doing this task. And he saw me with my guitar. I had it there all the time and saw me work and was just, I guess, intrigued. I'm thankful to say that. So I went in the studio after the tour was over shortly after Thanksgiving of 97. And me and my buddy Jerry Sumner, my brother Chad Taylor, we did a 7-song demo. I sent it to our production manager. And he called back, I like this. And I had it, had it playing in the background and it intrigued me enough to walk around the corner and see what CD that was because it was interesting enough. So that was flattering in and of itself. So a few weeks went by. That was kind of, a little before Christmas time. A few weeks went by and I got a phone call from his wife. And she was Hanson's tour manager. And she presented it that, we understand you're seeking this and pursuing your own record deal with your songs. But this has occurred with Hanson and there was another guitarist that was in place there and had moved on and asking if I was interested in an audition. So yeah, well, of course I'm interested in an audition. And so there was a couple of weeks there of just sending in some riff tapes and some headshots and, all those things I was aware of. And next thing you know, she calls and says, hey, we want to, they want to audition you. It's like, well, perfect. So that was early part of a week. And she sent, you got tickets. They were going to fly you down to Tulsa on a Wednesday. And so the boys, I went to the house where the family lived. They had a new home that they had just They had just purchased, so the older home was turning into the band's office area. So it was like, that was perfect. But yeah, so we, you know, played, went to audition, played Bop and Sweet Home Chicago and Blues Standards in the garage. And
just you and them.
Just me and Isaac Taylor and Zach, and you know, Diane the mom was there, and I think Walker, their dad, had kind of gone in and out, but this was just us hanging out, you know. So we were just, you know, playing Blues Standards and just jamming. They had a basketball hoop in the garage, just like everybody does in the Midwest, you know. So we stopped and played some hoops and had some cheeseburgers and drank some soda pops and just hung out. And that was on a Wednesday. And then they called the next day and said, hey, you got the gig. And so celebration. And well, I flew to New York City on Sunday, just a few days after that. And we rehearsed at SIR Studios in New York City all week long and just hanging out. And that's when I met Scott Hogan, was at the, you know, first band meet, because he was already there. And there was another keyboardist that was filling in the slot. But I was, you know, I'd gotten the gig. And so, yeah, I flew to New York, landed on a Sunday. We rehearsed all week long. And then the next Sunday, my first gig with them was on the Grammys, Radio City Music Hall. And me and Scotty standing there side to side. So it was good stuff. Yeah. That's how I got that gig. I know it's a long story, but
it's a fun one. It's a long story, but it's a quick turnaround. So,
It was all systems go. Yeah, we hit the ground running. And the gentleman that was playing keyboards with us on the Grammys, Paul Merkovic, he's now the one of the, I believe, the full on MD at The Voice show NBC. Yeah, he does that. I still keep in touch with Scott Hogan. Then we got a gentleman by the name of Matt Rohde that came in as the other keyboard to start the tour. And I think Matt came in, he came in pretty quick. So probably late March or early April, somewhere in that time. And I tell you, Matt Rohde, he's one of the most talented keyboard players I've ever played with. And he does a lot of the things for American Idol. And he's played with Jane's Addiction and Isaac Hayes. And yeah, you name it. It just Matt's, yeah, probably one of the most talented fellas you'd ever meet on piano. And I've really been fortunate to work around some good artists. And yeah, Matt's just incredible.
Yeah. I'll have to reach out to him too.
Yes. See what he's doing.
So you said that this sort of all started happening around that Thanksgiving, Christmassy time in 97. So Mbop had already, you already knew of the band, obviously. It had already taken off and was quite big. So what were your feelings like, thinking, oh my gosh, like, were you into it? Like, were you into?
It was a little outside of my normal listening avenues. I think I am a good musician, and a good fan of music, and I appreciate the art form and the craft of songwriting and putting all the pieces together. Like anything on the surface, I think we all, to not be any judgment, but you know, those are young kids, and you know, you kind of wonder, especially all the things that record labels and management and all the things that go on in the business, and you really wonder how far and how deep it goes in. I will tell you, I trusted our production manager on Fleetwood Mac, Paul Chevarria, to share that. I trusted him with what he saw as the integrity within that organization of their musical talent and what they were doing. And I trusted that. One of our carpenters that was on Fleetwood Mac, which was our stage manager on Hanson, Mark Candelario, goes by the name of Kahuna. He had experienced some of being around them, and he had a lot of similar observations and seeing that it was a good vibe. It was a good vibe. Yeah. So when the phone call, I was like, oh yeah, man, I'm in, this is cool. I'm climbing around in trusses, focus and lights, or I can play guitar. Well, I'm a musician. I'm going to go play guitar and try this avenue out. And it's been nothing but beneficial my entire life since. Yeah. I'm just, I'm so thankful. I don't know what I did deserve. I'm really blessed.
Yeah. So, oh, I'm sure it's very well deserved.
Yeah, it's just such a fun ride with them. And I tell you know, kind of back to the observations too of, maybe this a little bit of kind of, you don't know how deep and how good it is. But I tell you, those guys are just, they're probably some of the most talented in a group. And they open their mouths and they start to sing, and it's just, you can just hear the natural harmonies. And I know they've worked their tails off to get there, but you hear it, and there's something real special about brothers that sing together. I sing with my brother, and we can harmonize and get there. And when it's coming from a familial group like that, it's even tighter. And so I see and understand just, what they had going on. Real thankful and fortunate to observe it and be a part of it. And, I'm a kid growing up in Arkansas. All I wanted to do was be in a rock band, and I got to be that, you always wish that it would last longer, but the business is fickle, and between management and the internet taking off in the year 2000 and just the way things shuffle, things change and nothing stays the same forever. I get it. Those guys are just so talented, and we still keep in touch periodically, and they come through Kansas City. That's where I'm based out of here. We've visited since then, and it's been real nice. Just appreciate their talent. Yeah, it's genuine. They got good songs, and they craft such good pieces of work. It's like, you can't deny it. And people value success with to be selling the 200 million copies of stuff, or you sell a million copies of stuff. What where is the success, and where are you? I guess, as the artist or anybody delivering that piece to anybody. So it's, who's to say? Who's to say? But that's my opinion. And
no, I love it.
For whatever that's worth.
It's worth a lot, Jason. It's worth a lot. And we really appreciate it. You talked about like the business changing and the internet coming in. Scott told us a story about similarly Walker calling him and having to say that, like, everything was sort of changing up, and that's how it sort of ended. We talked about how it began, and then we got a little bit into how it ended or why it ended. Was that similar to you? Did you get like a personal phone call? Do you remember?
No, no, and I'm not surprised that Scott did. Mm-hmm. Scott was a younger man when he got that job. I know that there was a good relationship between Scott's folks and Hank Walker and Diane, because Scott was, I met him, he was 19, and I think he may have gotten involved with them as early as 18. So there's a line there. I mean, he was a grown man, right there on that line of, teenager, so I know that was part of his development as a touring musician and moving into that realm. And I get it and understand. And that, I think that they were a little tighter, and I don't question that at all. And that seems very appropriate from what I saw and how they would have dealt with it.
Yeah.
I do know. And part of the thing that still got a little weird, because we didn't play on the album this time around that was recorded in 99, we all jammed and did their thing, but those guys had the deal. That was their deal. They used incredibly seasoned Los Angeles musicians to make that second album with them.
Yeah.
That makes all the sense in the world. We were the employees. Thank you for putting me on give me a job. That's what that is. That's how it's viewed, and that's how it's worked. It's a hired gun. It's a hired hand. And I couldn't be more happy.
Yeah, I understand that.
Scott, but that, when it came, we finished the tour this time around. Like I said, it was a little after around Thanksgiving or something in 98. That's what's sticking in my mind. And then it was quiet for several months. We were, and then Scotty may have been in communication with him, But then the next communication that I got was a standby. So that was, you know, we finished that in 2000. And so then 9/11 happened in September of 2001. So we would have, it had been kind of quiet for, you know, 9 months, which wasn't unheard of after what I had already experienced in 99. And then we all got a call to, hey, stand by. We may be going to play as a band, doing a benefit, some kind of event fundraiser, you know, to help and assist, you know, in this tragedy. And then that was kind of it, you know. And then and I'm already in the business. I'm reading periodicals in literature about our business of, you know, production and shows and lighting and sound. And so you see that things have moved on, and you know, I was kind of down about it. My wife and I we had started our family, so I had a lot of things to focus on. And I have a band here with my buddy Jerry and Chad. We had a band going on, so we were focusing on continuing to write and produce and record music. So had other things, you know, you always focus on those things and just being creative. That's what I think, you know, part of being an artist and a songwriter is. I'm still, you know, continuing to do that today and play and write. I play drums at church on Sunday, and I got a band in town here in Kansas City. It's KC Bones, and all we play is Grateful Dead music. So it's, you know, it's all good and fun. I'm still having fun, and I'm early 50s, and I can't be thinking of doing this any other way. I remember playing in high schools. My parents would have to take me to, you know, to go play because I couldn't drive yet. You know, so when I was, you know, 14, 15, 16 years old, I've been playing in rock bands and playing music. So, yeah, it's all good.
Everyone in the area to look you up and come down and check out your shows.
I hope so. It's a fun vibe. I have a good time. I'm pleased with my musicianship and being a better guitar player for continuing my, craft.
So you obviously love playing live, and like can hear that come through in our conversation. So you did the Road to Albertine tour, and you did Time Around tour. So what was it like getting, you know, the opportunity to be on tour for those two shows? And was there a difference between that first Road to Albertine tour and then the second tour, either with yourself, the music, the crowd, the band, what you were seeing, the vibe, what was it like?
Well, I tell you, this is really a cool part of the story, and this is how I see it and view it. And trust me, they were both had equal impact to me, because back to my story of being, I had already been traveling around the country, going to arenas and theaters, working. So I had been to some of these places.
Yeah,
I had worked along with some of these stagehand unions to set my shows up. And so on that first tour, it was, just gangbusters. Every place was sold out. We were playing anywhere between, you know, 17 and 20,000 kids in an arena or a huge amphitheater every night. And I'd just gotten off tour with Fleetwood Mac, and I had seen all these places, not even, you know, it was the summer before I'd seen these places. So that was just really cool to me and impactful to see it from that other side as a musician and to understand it that way. And I'm tight with all the artists I've ever worked with. And, you know, you just see, you know, it's like, oh, yeah, that's where I want to be. And so we recorded the Road to Albertine, the live album. We recorded that in Key Arena in Seattle, and that was really cool to know that, hey, my name's gonna be on a major label with distribution and everything.
Yeah,
and so,
and I think there's a video too, isn't there?
I'm sorry,
I think there's a video as well.
I think there is some video. Yeah. I don't know, there may be some video that kind of accompanies some of that live footage or whatever. But it was just really cool being involved. So we got to go, you know, as every, even a live project, it's all recorded live, but you go in the studio. If there's anything wrong, you know, You have to do some little touch-ups because, you know, it's a live performance. There's always going to be little woo-hoo, little hiccups. And when you're going to put it in out on a in media format, it's got to be just tight and polished. But we had that experience of going to the major studio up in Connecticut with Elliot Shiner, which was a producer for the Eagles, and he's worked with Fleetwood Mac. And, you know, I'd already aware of that guy. I'd never met him, and just kind of sitting there in awe, just going, wow, you know, this ain't real. Pitch me. I'm just, you know, getting to see this all as a, you know, 28, 29 year old kid, you know? So that was really cool. And we got the album, and I love this part too, man. We got the album, the CD, and, you know, like in the late that year or early 99 or something. I remember getting the, you know, the package in the mail. And I'm looking at it, and it's the CD. I'm like, oh, man, this is cool, man. I'm on the CD. And I turn over, and there's a great picture on the back of it. If anybody's out there, you got it. And it's a picture of the fellas that at the end of the show, and they're giving their bows, and they have their hands raised. And it's a picture from upstage center looking out at the audience. And I got it. I was like, well, golly, where is this place at? And audience is all, you know, just climbing. It's like, oh, man, that's Red Rocks in Colorado. And, you know, what a treat to go play that beautiful park. You know, that's just, you just hear nothing but great stories about it. And to get to go experience that was really heavy to me. But I'm looking at this picture and going, well, man, that's cool. My mom and dad were at this show coming out to see me. And so, and I was like, well, they're sitting right there in front of the mix. And I'm looking on the back of the CD and my parents' picture, they got in that snapshot that's on the back of the CD of Road to Albertine. I can see my dad in his baseball cap and my mom standing next to her cheering. And it's just, that's a heavy thing for me. You know, you dream that as a kid and to get to make the album in a big way. And then your parents get, you know, out of obscurity, get pictured on the back of the album. You know?
That is a great story.
It's heavy. It's heavy. So that kind of wraps that tour up, just of those experiences. I mean, I had a bicycle. Me and Kahuna were riding our bicycles all over the nation. We flew with our bicycles to Europe. So we rode in London and Paris and, you know, man, just living life as a young person, you know. So that was the first tour. Like I said, the fellas did this time around. I came home focused on our band Honey Spoon here in Kansas City during that time, interim time. And then we went right back to work early 2000s. I got the album. And that was a cool thing because I got a copy of the album with a handwritten note from Taylor. Hey, dude, what's going on? Here's the new CD. Please don't share it. It's not finished. You know, it's not mastered yet. You know, just these are the songs. And, you know, here, you know, we trust you'll be good to learn them and call if you got any questions or, you know, I was like, oh, that's cool. I still got that in my file cabinet of keepsakes stuff. You know, I thought that was real cool.
That's right.
But then we, you know, got that right before, that was at the end of 1999. And what a weird thing anyway, everybody was thinking the computers were going to stop and every, you know, I can remember it like it was yesterday, but it was, that was fun. But then we went right back to work in the early 2000s and touching again on some familiarity that I'd had with touring already, going into venues. Well, on the second tour was I'm sure this is all either financially driven or just how, you know, what they consider maybe a sophomore slump with the second album and how it's produced and pushed. But we were playing all historic theaters. So back again, I'm in the theater business, production business. What a treat to go play some of these venues, the Orpheum in Boston and the Fox in St. Louis and in Kansas City and Atlanta and up in Milwaukee playing the theaters there and the famous Chicago theater with the Chicago sign on the outside. And, you know, it just really, I mean, experiences as a musician, I think those are things that those are the ones that make an impact and you remember, and they certainly have in my life, you know.
Yeah.
We got to play at the, we did a video shoot at the Fillmore West in San Francisco, and kind of back to me playing Grateful Dead. And, you know, that's a home of the Grateful Dead. And so we got to play Shoreline. I got to play at the Warfield Theater and at the Fillmore West, and to be there and see all the old rock posters on the wall, and just to know, who played in that room, all my heroes, you know?
Yeah.
It's heavy, just heavy to go do that. And that thing played on a video. I got the video, and so that's out there, and I get a guitar solo. Man, it's like a super cool experience, man. And just, so that was the similarities and the differences of the two, and all continue just to be beneficial in every way possible.
Yeah.
Every way possible. You know,
yeah, I understand, and I love your passion for it. It really comes through. Were the crowds on the second tour, were the crowds as chaotic and big, or had things started to sort of reach the peak, and then it had sort of started to level out?
Well, it's you know, I don't know how you're liking it, because because it's popular music, and we always see that there's peaks and valleys, and kind of back to the success story. Well, the crowds definitely weren't as big when you're in a theater of 3,000 versus a sold out arena or shed that's 18,000.
Yeah.
But the crowds were every bit as intense and passionate about what they were doing as being fans of those songs and that music, and it touching people, man, you know, and kind of, you had asked about this earlier, and what was your familiarity? Well, it wasn't as deep maybe as it could have been, but I was, you know, in doing my own thing and writing. Mm. But I tell you, when I got that second album this time around, I'm like, oh yeah, this is something I could put this in and listen to and groove on. And wow, here I am getting to figure these songs out and go play these songs. And I'm telling you, to me, as an artist and a writer, they made their growth moment. It was a movement up, and those songs were of a heavier groove vibe than that first one, which is just, it appealed to me as just personally speaking. But God, well, what a treat to get to go play those songs, man. Those are some really good rock songs on this time around.
You mentioned that you had the album given to you, and that handwritten note from Taylor saying, you know, this is for you to sort of learn. Are you given the music, and then as a musician yourself, you sort of go off and learn your parts just from listening? And then when you say start practicing for tour is when you come together and do it all together for the first time? Is that how generally it would work?
That's exactly how this particular chain of events happened. Okay. I don't remember being in communication too much with Scott, even though we had some periodic conversations throughout that year. But I believe the same thing happened for he and Matt. We all got our copy. Hey, go learn it. We're going to meet up at this date in Tulsa, Oklahoma, which is where we went into band rehearsals. And that was where we walked in with our charts.
Yeah.
We gathered all of our thoughts, and whichever way that Isaac, Taylor, and Zach wanted to go, we said, whatever way, you're good. This is your show. But we were all super close with that thought and super close with our interpretations of the arrangement. So it didn't take us long to lock into our groove. And I'm telling you, man, that was a good band right there. Mm-hmm. The band had a vibe. And, you know, I never wished that it ever end, but I completely understand things changing. And that's why there's no love lost, and complete respect for Hanson, you know, Taylor, Isaac, Zach, all the whole family, just, you know, love them dearly, but I understand it. I really do, you know?
Yeah. So you also bringing, this might sound, I don't know, but like you bringing all your own guitar, like, so say you're getting on that flight to Tulsa to do your practice, do you bring all your own equipment, or is that something that's supplied to you? Like, how does that work?
Well, it's weird how that works, because in most scenarios, most guitar players can either just rent a piece, but I'm a left-handed guitar player, so you can't just rent a guitar in most. Sometimes you can, depends on what you get. So I always travel with a guitar, and I think most musicians travel with their main acts. There's many opportunities and avenues in our business to do band rentals in a community. Okay. Some communities are smaller. They may not have that luxury of having that type of business. Mm. But like here in Kansas City, there's a good friend of mine, and that's his business. Is he's got a lot of band gear and rents it out to artists as they need coming through our region. When you're on a major tour, you're traveling with your stuff all the time. And once we went on tour, my amplifier, my guitars, they went in with the entire backline package, and it all traveled as one unit. But when we were done with the tours, my amplifier, my guitars were, you know, shipped home on an airplane or truck and delivered back to the house. But yeah, I traveled, but I did travel always with a guitar on my back. So it was in the hotel room, in the buses. And I still do that today if I travel doing production work. And last couple of years I've been on a show that's kept me frequently out of town, and I did the first trip without a guitar, and I said, I'm never doing that again. And so every trip after that, I got my guitar on my back, and it makes a hotel room so much better in the evening times. When I'll watch some TV, but I'd rather sit there and play guitar. And I'm just thankful to continue to be able to make music, because it makes me happy, you know.
I can tell. I love it.
Awesome.
What was your favorite chord progression to learn, or your favorite song to learn from Hanson? Do you have a favorite?
Man, I tell you, that whole This Time Around was just, like I said, that album, it hit me. And it hit me as a musician. I went, yeah, that's cool, man. I dig this, you know. So all those songs on that album were cool to me. It was really cool. I got to... Johnny Lang, great guitarist Johnny Lang, played the guitar solo on the song Hand in Hand. And so I got to, you know, be, you know, channel my best Johnny Lang when we're doing the, you know, and the fellas were always just so, so humble. It was all about the vibe, you know, and I think we would get close. It wasn't an environment where, oh, Jason, you got to play that solo note for note. You get the vibe, and if you get the energy and the vibe, and so they gave that artistic freedom and that leniency. It's still all within a chord arrangement. You're not going to play a handful of crazy notes, but they gave, hey, that was cool, man. You laid it down a little different. That was cool. And it would acknowledge it kind of like that. So yeah, this time around stuff was good. I love it. I've probably never danced as hard playing Where's the Love and Umbop, you know, so you know, go figure. It's all fun. Man from Milwaukee was always a real good jam to play. Really dug Speechless on the first tour, because we did our band introductions and solos during that time. So Speechless is always, because it's got such a good funky kind of groove on the deal to you know, kind of get a good vibe. But that was always fun to play. So yeah, I mean, just it's all fun. It's fun. Hey, I would love playing guitar. It's fun playing guitar. I don't, whatever you're doing it. So
you don't need an excuse yet. So was the whole family out on tour with you guys for the first two? So we hear a lot about everyone coming. Was that your experience? Yep.
Yep, and I tell you, it's what a great familial environment, you know.
Yeah.
A lot of crazy things can happen out on the road. I was very happy to be in that environment. They still let us be youthful kids, and, you know, I was a grown man. Mm. You know, you're going to the tour bus, there's the driver, and everybody's hanging out. You're going to have your couple of adult beverages in the night rolling down the road. But it was super chill. I've told people before, because I know I feel confident. You know, I wasn't in that circle of finances. I didn't want to be, you know. I feel confident that they were definitely reaping benefit financially. But the respect of lifestyle I observed was real chill. We didn't have a bunch of crazy toys, and they probably could have had a trailer full of motorcycles and dune buggies and pinball machines, and we would all just come off the stage and go throw the frisbee or play some hacky sack and hang out. You know, that was the vibe. Yeah. That was the vibe. It wasn't a materialistic consumerism aspect. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, I always respected that and appreciated that. We had some fun times. Yeah. We got in a little bit of trouble throwing the frisbee sometime, but, you know, what are you going to do?
Well,
I'm just kind of leading into that one if you want to hear it.
Yeah, I do, of course.
Yeah, one time we were in, so it was on the, oh, gosh. It may have been, it was the second tour this time around, and we played in Houston, and it was kind of an awkward building, but I just remember the seats. I think it was a general admission show, but we basically, it was me and Scotty and Matt and usually all six of us, and just start throwing the frisbee around, you know, after the deal and hanging out, or, you know, like I said, just it's usually like that. And for some reason, this was an indoor place. And man, we were all chunking the frisbee, and I had the frisbee, and I just let it go. And I'm telling you, just something, as soon as I let it go, it was just like, oh no. And the frisbee made a beeline towards the sprinkler irrigation system in this venue, and it just went snip, and it zipped off the top of a sprinkler head in the irrigation system. And all this old black water that had never been anywhere at all except in these pipes in this irrigation system just started spraying out all over the room. We just all hauled out of there. You know, oh my gosh. And then they came and found me on the bus, and they were like, well, you were the only one we couldn't find. I'm like, yeah, I did that. Sorry. And that it was a moment there, you know, accidents happen. Nobody got in trouble, but there was a moment there. I was like, oh my goodness, this show's not going to happen, because it was just such a mess. And they got it cleaned up by the, you know, thankful to all the venue folks and the people working there. They got it cleaned up, and we still had the show. But yeah, that was a pretty fun. It was like, oh my gosh,
that's funny. I love that.
Yeah, when that's kind of, you know, stuff that would get me, you know, that's what would happen to me.
I've got another one. Scott's asked me to bring up with you your Enrique Iglesias story.
Oh, did he now?
Yeah.
Well, that's good. I'm glad that he was entertained by that. That's a pretty good one. And it's funny you say that, because I'm in the Stagehand Union here in Kansas City, and we just had, what's today? Monday? So Saturday, we had Enrique Iglesias, Pitbull, and Ricky Martin here on tour. And so did that show. Oh, and I don't know Enrique and Noel enough to say anything, but they did their deal. But we were on a radio show in San Diego. And a radio show is where several different types of artists come in during a promotional event. And, you know, they're going to usually play an abbreviated set, go in there and, you know, play an hour instead of an hour and a half. But we were on that same bill. It was, I can't remember. So it was Enrique Iglesias. It was us. And, oh, there's the name of the band, and I can see the face. And it's, oh, I was totally escaping me. Yeah. So anyways, back to the story. There's a putting green back behind the venue.
Oh, dear.
And I was a budding. I had my bicycle out there. But at this time, I was kind of a budding golfer with some of our crew guys. And I was like, oh, I kind of get this. And I was able to hit a couple of good shots. So I was just out there putting, you know, for the cup. And it was a long kind of putting green, probably 20, 30 feet long. And I got a pretty good putter. I'm not a professional, or I'd be playing golf today. But I'm out there just putting, and here comes Enrique, and, you know, is, you know, the fella, you know, tour manager, or, you know, just the, you know, kind of the fella traveling with him in the show, You know, I'm sure I'm working for. So we started putting, and let me have a little putt. And so he broke out a putt, and the next thing you know, it just, man, we're just kind of friending along, and hey, you know, make this a little friendly, close to the, you know, closest to the whole wager kind of thing. So next thing you know, it's like, oh yeah, sure, $5, and I went you know, $5, $10, and well, oh, you want some more? And so we just kept going, and I think I was probably into him. I think he gave me like $80 to $90 real quick of making $5 putts off of him. So Scott was just sitting there laughing all the time because Enrique didn't have money on him at that moment in time. Right. And not that he didn't, you know, but his buddy that was, like I said, the tour managers just kept handing me $5 bills, and Scott's just over the corner rolling. Ah!
And, you know, that's pretty good.
Yeah. So yeah, it was, I would sink a few, and you know, I was out and we were playing hard. So yeah, but that's always been a decent part of my golf game. So if I'm going to win, I guess I need to take some money from Enrique Iglesias.
I love that.
But he was the gentleman about it, and we had a good high five and laughs all about it, and enjoyed, you know, sharing the stage with them that night. You know, it was cool. The radio shows were cool. We did another one, and it was really cool. This one, at Dodger Stadium for Wang Tango, I believe is the name of the event. And so we played in the middle of the afternoon, and the gentleman that was the stage manager on that, Marty Holm, he continues to work in this business today, and he was our tour manager on Fleetwood Mac, and I've seen him since then, and you know, had some good fond memories. But that was a fun gig, playing Dodger Stadium in L.A. Man, you know,
yeah, wow,
you can't make this stuff up, man. I'm telling you, I don't know what I did to deserve the blessings that I got, but I'm just, you know, so thankful to have these experiences and, you know, share them. My wife got to be there for part of it. My daughters have seen that now, and they're both just, you know, totally into music, and they really appreciate that I got that. And they've come out to see our Grateful Dead band here in town, and they, you know, they love seeing that. So yeah, it makes me real happy, you know, that they see that part of me.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it's fun.
I will think about winding it up, but you've got a poster in your background. It's a handsome poster from Mexico. Is it Mexico?
Yeah, do you see that? That was on this time around. Yeah. And because I'm a big, not a hoarder, but I got stickers and backstage passes and guitar picks and drumsticks, and I got a drum head over here over my shoulder. You see that up there? Yeah. That's signed by Fleetwood Mac, and I used to work for Tom Petty. So there's Tom Petty passes and stickers, and I tell you, man, that guy was just. I won't get emotional, okay?
Okay.
But when you get to work for your heroes, and your heroes are cool,
yeah,
it doesn't get much better than that. And I got to work for Tom Petty for 6 years, and I tell you, just such a treat to listen to that guy play. Yeah. I got to run camera during the show and watch Mike Campbell, the guitar player, all night long play guitar to some of my favorite music, and just what a cool thing. But that handsome poster, that was from Mexico City, I think that was in Mexico City. We played in Monterrey, Mexico, and Mexico City on that tour, and that was real fun because that was my first trips to Central America. And real proud to, you know, to have that. And we did a run in South America. So we're so real happy to have seen that country and experience those cultures, and, you know, just beautiful people and delicious food, and what a, you know, great environment. My wife's got a cousin that lives down in Brasilia now. So we have fun stories talking, you know, just being in that area and understanding, you know, the dynamic of the people and how much love they have. And it was just such a fun trip. It was good.
Well, I love that you're collecting all these things, like just looking around. It's like a museum. And I think, like, in the best possible way, you've had the most amazing life, some incredible experiences. And I think keeping it all together and having that collection and those memories is so important, even in the years to come, for your children and your children's children. So incredible.
Yeah, can I show you two more things I'm real proud of? Is that okay?
I would love to hear that, Jason.
You will like this. And let me focus the light up a little better. So the first one, I'll tell you, and this is a cool story. Mm-hmm. The first one is a picture of the band and the crew we pulled up at Mount Rushmore here in the States at the park, and literally pulled in the parking lot, and the lights went all out. It's like, oh no, we can't make it in. And Patricia, our tour manager, went up and, hey, I got Hanson out here, yada yada. And then the next thing you know, and the park was closing. That's what was going on. Next thing you know, the lights come back on. Come on, everybody, come in and get a picture real quick. So I don't know if you can see that.
Stepping right here.
So yeah, that's everybody. That's everybody standing in front of Mount Rushmore at night.
Oh, cool.
You see that? Okay. Yes. So the one below that, and back to just historical venues, and you know, I loved Australia, okay? That there's some historical music venues in the USA that are just, you know, they're deep. And we played at the Grand Ole Opry in Nashville. I grew up in Arkansas. I'm a blues rock roll guy, but I got a pretty good sensibility and understanding of country music. So we took a group photo at the Ryman Auditorium in Nashville, Tennessee.
Oh wow!
See that? You can see everybody in the picture a little
better.
Oh,
you look at Isaac. He's so young. Oh my goodness,
yeah.
Taylor.
Yep.
Oh wow.
Yeah, so that's a signed photo that the boys signed, and you know, just love of, hey, thanks for sharing the road with us, Jason. So I mean, those are treasures.
Absolutely.
Treasures to me.
Yeah. Incredible. You know? Incredible memories.
Yeah, it is. It is. And that, I mean, I tell you, sister, I don't know what you do outside of this interview, and I thank you so much for flattering me with the time to share this, but man, just make relationships and have fun in life, and don't be afraid to grasp onto things. Don't be afraid to dream, because that's what we got. You know, you make those times. So go out and get those things. You know, I dreamed as a kid to be in a rock band. It happened. I know it's few and far between, but don't let up. Don't give up on it. You know, it's important.
You're going to make me really teary.
I'm sorry, that's kind of where I'm at right now. I'm so thankful and blessed. I got a beautiful wife too. You know, I got a beautiful family, and I'm still getting to play rock and roll music, which means so much to me, and have these conversations. That's still part of what I do to this day.
Yeah.
You know, I've been doing this. Like I said, I'm maybe 53 here in a couple of months, and I've been doing this since I was 19 years old, and I still wake up in the morning going, hey, let's go put up a show, or I got a show tonight. I want to go play some rock and roll music, you know?
Yeah.
That's cool. That's just cool to me.
Absolutely. You're living the dream.
I am. So is that successful? Yes.
That is.
That is successful.
Yep.
So I'm good with that.
Oh, Jason, this has been so lovely, and
I appreciate it, Megan. This is thank you so much for doing this, and I hope nothing but success for you. And I can't wait for you to please send me the link just so I can hear myself talk about this.
Yeah, and you can share it around. But I was thinking it's another memory that we've now etched forever, you know. And I think things like this live on, and that's why I'm finding it really important to do it and to have people share their stories, because often we don't do it enough. So yeah, it's been incredible to be able to get to do it with you today.
Well, I appreciate that so much. I've got more out of it than I had anticipated.
Good. I'm glad. So I'm going to push stop, but don't you hang up. So let me push stop, and then I'll just have a quick chat. All right. Thanks.
Yep. So just appreciate this, and make sure that you enjoy the people around you, and thank you for the time.